Good evening. My name's Everett, and I'm an addict. And y'all bear with me because I have a ruptured vocal cord, and my voice is kind of raspy. But my clean date is June the 4th of 1997. And I'm not saying that to brag. I'm saying that to let you all know that anything is possible. If I can get clean and stay clean, anybody can get clean and stay clean. You know, my story starts on, I'm actually from Port Arthur, Texas. Yeah, I am. And I'm actually from Port Arthur. I come from a family. I have 9 siblings, a mother and a father. Well, I had a mother and a father. But my parents, both my parents died since I've been clean. But I had a pretty average life. You know, we were middle class. But out of 9 siblings, out of 9 kids in my family, I'm the only one that ever went to treatment. And I went to treatment 4 times. And the last time I went to treatment, it was actually at Austin Recovery in 1997. I'm actually like grateful for this facility. It ain't nothing like Austin Recovery, you know, to me, because this is where I got clean. This is the facility that God put in my path to give me the opportunity at a new way of life. And I got a football scholarship when I graduated from high school back in 1979. And I got a football scholarship to the University of Nebraska. And I was a tight end, but I was small, but could catch really good and was fast. And the guy that started before me broke his leg the second day of practice. And so me and 2 other freshmen, and both of those guys were a lot bigger than me, but they couldn't catch. So I got a chance to play all the pass plays. So my freshman year, I got a chance to play and start for Tom Osborne at the University of Nebraska. And I was a Cornhusker. And things went really well that during the football season. But after football season, I need to tell y'all that in 1979, it's when they implemented the no pass, no play rule. If you didn't pass, you couldn't play. But it started snowing. When I came home for Thanksgiving, I got back to Nebraska, and everything was white. I took a shopping cart because I came back with a little money because my parents, they gave me money. I took a shopping cart and rode down to the liquor store, filled that shopping cart up, and rode back to my dorm and didn't come out until it was time for me to go home for Christmas. And when I went to the gymnasium to get my ticket to go home for Christmas, the coach asked me, "Where you been?" I said, "Just hanging out, just, you know." He said, "Well, you know, you're supposed to have been going to class." And he said, "We had been wondering what happened to you. We thought you didn't come back after Thanksgiving." But anyway, he told me, "I'm giving you a one-way ticket," because they rescinded my scholarship because I didn't pass to be eligible for spring training the next semester. And I did. I went home with my head hanging down, with my tail between my legs, because I flunked out. And my dad worked for Chevron Oil Company. So he got me a job working with him. So I was 19 years old, making the same money that my dad made and took care of 10 kids. Well, 10 people. And so I kind of like had the world by the tail swinging it. And I met a guy in the plant that was the dope man. He sold all the dope to everybody. And I need to tell y'all that they had about 5,000 people in that plant that got high. I don't know how many of them didn't. But the first 3 times I went to get some weed from him, I paid him cash. And he said, "Man, you know what? You're the only person that paid me cash. Everybody else, I have to chase them around all weekend, pay their weekend trying to get my money." since you're the only one, and since you're the only black guy that paid me up front, I'm going to start fronting it to you, and you give it to them. And since you hang out with them, y'all live in the same area, you chase their asses around. And that's how it started, y'all. You know, he gave me 3 pounds of weed every 2 weeks. Every other Thursday, he'd come to my house and give me 3 pounds of weed. And every other Thursday after that, I gave him a key to my garage because after the first time I went to his house, I was scared to go back. Because I went to his house and he had one room full of garbage bags full of weed. And he had another room full of garbage bags full of cocaine. And I said to myself, ain't nowhere in the hell the law don't know all this dope is here. So I told him, hey man, we can do this, but I ain't coming to your house. So you take my key and you drop my stuff off and I'll have your money in the spot. You know, and that's how we did it for like, this went on for about 5 years. From I think it was like 1984 to 1989. We did that every 2 weeks. And I graduated from 3.5 pounds of weed to 3.5 pounds of weed plus a half a kilo of coke every 2 weeks. And I would sell that. And I need to tell y'all that I've never been to jail. Because everybody I sold dope to, I worked with. So nobody on the streets knew I was selling dope. But can you imagine getting a half a kilo of cocaine every 2 weeks? But back in May of 1989, he got busted. And when he got busted, he had just left my house. And he called me. He used this one phone call because we was doing really big business together. And he called me, he told me, he said, man, they got me. And he said, when I left your house, when I got back home, they was at my house. And I said, if they went to his house, you know, I think he's still in jail. But anyway, you know, like I had been selling dope, but casually using dope. I was able to go to work and do everything. You know, I had a house. I actually had 3 houses. Because I had a house that I lived in, a house that I kept my dope in, and a house that I kept my money in. Because I worked with some old guys that all of them was married and had a woman across town and a girlfriend on the other side of town. And those guys, that's just the way it was for them. They made good money and they had enough. And they believed that as long as a man taking care of home, he can do what the hell he wants. You know, and it was like that for me for a while because I never seen my actual paycheck. You know, my wife kept, you know, I went straight to the direct deposit. I didn't see that stuff because I had I was like Scarface with money. I really was. I had a shitload of money. And so, but when that guy got busted and all the while, my disease had progressed. So I said to myself, well, since I don't have this connect no more, I'm just going to keep what I got. I ain't going to sell none. I'm just going to keep what I got. And it took me 18 months to smoke a half a kilo of cocaine. I smoked a half a kilo of cocaine. I smoked all three of them houses. My wife and both girlfriends left. I had 7 kids. All of them was gone. The job was gone, and I was about 50 pounds lighter than I was in 1988. By the time all of that dope was gone in May of 89. And that's the first time I went to treatment because I knew that I couldn't keep that up because I didn't have the connection no more. So I went to treatment. You know, I turned myself into the EAP at work. They sent me to treatment, and they sent me to treatment at it was like I was at the fucking Hilton, you know, where they seen a seat around every day, and you pick out what you want to eat, you know, your 3 meals for the next day, you know, steak and omelets and all of that shit, you know, and I stayed clean for 2 years because they didn't test for alcohol. As long as I was clean of cocaine, I was good. The first year, they tested me every week, every Tuesday. As long as I didn't do no coke, I was good. But I could drink all I want. So me and Hennessy had become real good friends. And that second year, I had to go and get drug tested every 2 years. But the day, at the end of that second year, the day they told me that my name was going back into the random pool, that I didn't have to worry about reporting every 2 weeks, I got high. Because I didn't know that alcohol was a drug. It just wasn't my drug of choice. But I was in the club one night. I went to the club to celebrate getting off of probation from my job, from the EAP program, the Employees Assistance Program. So I was in the club celebrating. And somebody came into the club and said, man, y'all be careful when y'all leave because they checking license around the corner. When you pull off in the parking lot, they checking license. So I came up with a big idea. I know how I can pass any sobriety test. I'm going to go get me a hit of cocaine. And I'd be all right. And there it went. You know, so I stayed high from that night in 89, in 91, until 1997, when I went to treatment a couple more times, and the preacher at the church that I went to, the same church that I was a deacon in, counting the money on Sundays, and every Sunday night I got high. I'd count that money on Sunday, and I'd keep $50, $60 of their money and got high every Sunday night. You know, but this same guy knew a guy here in Austin that was connected to Austin Recovery, and he got me into treatment here. So I need to tell y'all that I went from that Hilton Treatment Center to the Stratford House at that time. And this facility, the men's facility for Austin Recovery, was on MLK and Rio Grande. At the Stratford House. This was 20 years ago. And I got accepted into treatment. And the day that they called me and told me, well, we'll call you and we'll have a bed available in about a week. So I was back living with my parents. Then I had to lost. I went from, you know, I got married in 1985. And I had 8 people in my wedding. And me, my wife, and all 8 people in my wedding went to the Bahamas for the honeymoon. I took everybody with us because I'm telling y'all that things were really good. But I went from being really, 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 really good to my mama had to buy me a $44 bus ticket to get to Austin to treatment. You know, I had lost it all. I smoked up 6 kids. That job, self-esteem, self-pride, and I left Port Arthur and went to treatment. And the only thing that I wanted to do is come back and tell them motherfuckers how you like me now. That was the only reason I wanted to get clean, because, like, if you had a refinery job in Port Arthur, you know, you were set for life. Because that's where motherfuckers retire from, you know. And you did. If you had a refinery job, all you had to do is wake up every morning, go to work, and you were guaranteed a smooth life. And I fucked it up after 15 years. I smoked that job away. But I got here to treatment, and I had been at my parents' house for about 2 weeks before the late people called me and told me that they had a bed for me here in Austin. And I was a crack smoker. And I don't know if y'all can probably can identify, but if you stop smoking for a couple of weeks, you know, you can clean up pretty good, pretty quick, you know. And I did. I cleaned up really quick, and I got here to treatment, and I didn't look like what I had been through. And I was sitting outside waiting for the admissions people to call me, and a lady walked up. You know, I told y'all that I have 6 kids. At that time, I had 6 kids. I had 6 kids by 6 different women. Well, I had 6 kids by 5 different women. And I had triplets. I had 3 kids that was the same age. They was born like 2 months apart. Because I told you I had one house I lived in, One house I kept the money in, and one house I kept the dope in. But each one of them houses, I had a woman in it. And when my wife got pregnant, my two girlfriends got mad, so they got pregnant too. So I did. In 1992, I had three kids. And today, those three kids, I think they're 26 now. You know, but I had that good job. So when I got fired, I was paying $1,500 a month child support. But you know, I was behind on child support. I was behind. I hadn't filed taxes in 5 or 6 years. You know, I lost a house and repoed a couple of cars because I might have had about 5 or 6 cars at that time. But I came into treatment, and I was sitting out there at that admissions desk, and, you know, waiting for them to call me in, and a really attractive woman passed by. And I told you I'd clean up real quick. So I was flirting with her, and she went inside. And when she came back outside, I didn't know that she was one of the techs that worked across the street at the Stratford House. And when she came back and called my name and I stood up and got ready to walk across the street, she looked at me and rolled her eyes. And I said, well, why is she mad at me, you know? But anyway, she went inside the office at the Stratford House and told the guy that was running there at the time, I don't think he ready for treatment, because he was really, really rude to me. So the guy called me in the office and asked me what happened. And I told him the truth, you know. And I need to tell y'all that that's the very first time, trying to get clean this time, that humility set in. Because I got really humble. I got humble in a motherfucker. I was humble as hell because I had already, my mama gave me a bus ticket and $5. Because she said, if I give you 10, you probably won't get on the bus. That's just how crack had me. I probably would have went and got a hit before I got on the bus if I'd have had $10. You know, because $10 back then was enough to get me started. You know, but I only had $5 and some change in my pocket. So I was in Austin, Texas, you know, from Port Arthur, which is like 4 hours away, didn't know nobody, and these people threatening to not let me in. So I got humble real quick. And I went to the guy, and I told him what happened. I said, I don't know what I got to do to this lady, but I hope you let me apologize to her because I really need this treatment center because I was scared, didn't have nowhere to go. I'm talking about a guy that had had a silver spoon in his mouth my whole life. My whole life I got my way up until the last 3 years of my drug addiction. You know, like that must have been 95, 6, and 7 was really fucked up for me. You know, it don't take long for crack to take you out. But, and the guy said, okay, well, you seem sincere, and you've already been accepted, so we're going to let you in, but you better not say nothing to that woman. And I'm going to tell y'all that I came in this facility, and I was humble because I really didn't have no way to get back home. See, if I'd have had ticket money to get home, I probably would have told, fuck you. You know, ain't no telling what I would have did because I did have a streak of arrogancy in me. But I'm going to tell y'all that I went through that 30-day treatment, and I was like the president. You know, I was keeping everybody in line. And just like I'm here right now, y'all, I never forget. It was a Sunday evening just like this. They had a guy came from H&I at Narcotics Anonymous, and he came in. He had some gold on his neck. You know, his pants were starched and ironed. And I was sitting outside smoking a cigarette. And he drove up in a really nice car. And I said, I want to be like that. I want to be like him. I want to ride back to Port Arthur and tell them motherfuckers how you like me now. That's all I wanted to do. But this guy came in there, and he pretty much did like me. He talked to us. And at the end of his speech, he said that if anybody don't like the way your life been going the last 6 months, follow me. Follow me for 6 months. And if you don't like what's going on, you can gladly go back to doing what the hell you want to do. And I've been following this guy for 20 years. In 3 months, In a couple of days, I left 21 years clean. But I went through the 30-day treatment program, and they allowed me to go into the level 2 program here, to where you could go out and get a job, and you can come back to work. You have to be back at the Stratford House by 6 o'clock and sit in class from 6 to 9. And after that, you know, you go do what you want to do. And so the first day of that level 2 program, they had a couple of guys. I didn't go nowhere because I didn't know nobody. I didn't know how to ride the bus, so I sit my ass on the porch all day. I wouldn't, you know. And so they had some guys that I was in treatment with. They came back with bags. They had cigarettes and deodorant and cookies and shit, you know, sneaking them in the room. Because I don't know if it's like that now, but you can't have no cookies and shit in your room. You know, but they was. So I asked those guys, I said, man, where y'all went? I went, stole this shit, what y'all do? And they told me that. They told me that they went to the ready labor place and did a day's work. So the next day, I got up and said, I'm going to follow them. I'm going to go to the labor ready and make me some money. And I did. I went to the labor ready. We caught the bus at Rio Grande and MLK, not Rio Grande, at Guadalupe and MLK. And rode the bus around to Old Tarf and First Street. They had a labor-ready place right there. And so we went in there, and they gave me a job. They called me. They took me for a job when they was building the DoubleTree Hotel at MLK and 35. So I went there, and when I got off that evening, you know, they picked us up and took us back and gave me my $28 check. I walked out of that place on Old Tarf and walked to the corner of Congress and Old Tarf to the HEB, cashed that check, bought me some cigarettes and some deodorant, you know. And those guys that was in front of me in line was talking to another guy about work. And he asked them if they have a resume. Those guys said, no, but I need to tell you that I was in treatment. So everything that I had of value was on my back in my backpack, because you didn't dare leave your shit and go somewhere and think you're going to come back to it. At the treatment center. So I had my resume in my backpack. I handed the guy a resume, and he looked at it, and he'd say, man, you don't look like you've worked nowhere for 15 years. You don't look old enough to be the head of a job for 15 years. And I told him, well, I have. He said, okay. And so I got on the bus and went back to the Stratford House. And by the time I got back there, he called me and asked me, could I be at his office the next morning for an interview. And his office was on balconies and 2222. And I need to tell y'all, that was the very next time that humility set in. So that same woman that I was ignoring, because that, like, that got me kicked out, I had to go to that woman and ask her to help me, because I didn't know how to ride the bus. And I was 37 years old and had never had to ride a bus. So I asked her to show me, you know, map it out for me, how to catch the bus from MLK and Guadalupe over to 2222 and balconies. And she did, you know, she showed me. And again, I went in that office and had another cute girl at the desk, the receptionist. I went in there talking shit, you know, because I had been cleaned up and got a haircut then. So I really thought I had been clean 30 days. And I'd been doing some push-ups like I was in jail. So I had been beefed up, you know. And when I went there flirting with her, and so the guy set me up for an interview at Applied Materials on Wall Street and Rutherford. I didn't know where the hell Wall Street and Rutherford was. So again, that same woman I was flirting with in that office, I had to ask her, can you help me? You know, again, that was the third time humility really kicked me in the ass. And I decided after that I'm going to stop tripping and I'm going to be humble. And maybe things will work out for me. You know, and I did. I got a job. I got an interview at Applied Materials. And the lady asked me, what did I do for 15 years at a refinery? First, what is a refinery, and what did you do for 15 years? And I pumped crude oil out the ground in West Texas, put it in trucks, drove it to Port Arthur and shipped it out in all cans and gas trucks. And she said, if you could make this shit up, she said it just like that, if you could make this shit up and make it sound as good as you made it sound, you could work for me. And she asked me to report to work Monday morning. So I did. This was like a Thursday. I went to work there. They hired me at $9 an hour. And I was still in treatment, making $9 an hour. And so at that time, you know, they let you save your money to get into an Oxford house. Because I tell you, my plan was to go back to Port Arthur. But I say, shit, if I can get me a job here, might as well let me see how it's going to work out. You know, because I was, and so I got paid. My first check, I never forget it. I made $775, and I was still in treatment. Shit, I done hit the jackpot. $700 a week, back in 97, that was a lot of money. So I did that, y'all. I got out of treatment, you know, and I went into an Oxford house, because after a week, I had enough money to pay my first month's rent. You know, and all of that stuff. So after 2 weeks, I went over there on Congress to one of them buy here, pay here lots. And got me a 1987 Maxima. And I drove that fucking car for 3 years. But I did, y'all. I'm telling y'all that I did all of that. And I stayed clean. You know, I learned in this facility what to do to stay clean. You know, that's all this place does. This place is here to help you, first of all, get clean, to stop Jones, to stop tripping, stop craving, you know, and then they give you some information on what to do when you get out of here to stay clean. You know, they tell you, you know, make some meetings, find a sponsor, start working some steps, change people, places, and things. So I did all of that stuff, y'all. I started hanging around with, you know, this guy that told me to follow him for 6 months. I started following his ass. Every day I got off from work, I'd catch the bus to his house. Then when I got a car, I would drive to his house until the meeting. And after the meeting, I'd get me something to eat and I'd go home. Because I was living in an Oxford house. I'd go home and close my door and get up the next morning and go to work. Because I need to tell y'all that every day I was getting further and further behind on child support. So I went to the Attorney General office and turned myself in and told them people what I was making. And they made a payment arrangement with me. So all them kids started getting their money every month. But back at work, you know, like every Thursday at noon and Friday at noon, those guys would never come back to work. Some bitches go get drunk at lunch and wouldn't come back to work. And I had child support to pay. I couldn't deal with that shit. So I would come to work an hour early, do my job, and when they come in, I would learn their job. So on Thursdays when they left, I'd go up there and do their job so the line could keep moving. Because I didn't know it at the time, they would leave with the damn supervisor. They was all heroin addicts. They would leave with the supervisor. And so they had it made, his ass would cover for them. But it wouldn't get me where I needed to be. I needed a check. I needed a full check. So I did that. I learned a job. And in a year, I got a permanent job at Applied Materials. A year after that, they made me the line lead. And it went from like $9 to $15 when they gave me a permanent job. And when I made lead, I went from $15 to $30 an hour. Yeah, them some bitch was paying me $30 an hour. And my supervisor was still getting high. So I covered his ass, and he let me do whatever I wanted to do. So I would sign my own time sheet, you know, and all this, you know, to where. And I had to arrive. You know, I told y'all I went and got that car at that buy here, pay here lot on Congress. And every year I trade up. And in 2001, I went to Mitsubishi to take my car to get the oil changed. And I don't know how I left. When I left to go back to work, I left, rolled a Mitsubishi Montero Sport off the showroom floor. And I was ready to go back to Port Arthur, tell them motherfuckers how you like me now. And I did. I went home that weekend. And my daughter, She's 35-4 right now. My daughter was graduating from high school. I left and went to her graduation, and it took me 18 months to get back to Austin. Because on my way back on 290, right outside of Hempstead, I had a blowout. And my car flipped. I got ejected out the car, and I wound up paralyzed from the chest down. And because of Robert Ammons, that lawyer that I had, you know, he revived the plan. He told me, "But I'm going to fix you up to where you never have to work again in your life." So it took us 2 years for that plan. But in 2004, May of 2004, you know, I went to work. May the 18th was the last day that I worked. You know, and because I was clean and in recovery, you know, it worked out to my advantage. But I'm telling y'all that any addict can stop using, lose the desire to use, and find a new way to live. And you do that by finding your home group, making 90 and 90, getting you a sponsor, working the steps and practicing the principles behind the step, and hanging out with people that's faced your dilemma and found a way out. Because we can easily go back to doing that to them people we left. And I don't know all of y'all can relate. You know, but I did. I started hanging out with some guys in recovery. You know, at that time, I was hanging out with guys that had like 5 years. And I didn't think, how the fuck somebody get 5 years clean? I said, it's got to be a nerd. Something got to be wrong with his ass. But I need to tell y'all that when I got in the accident, I had 5 years clean. I had a job making over $125,000 a year. But I didn't have $5,000 in my savings. Because I was clean following those guys, but I wasn't doing what they do. I wasn't working those steps. I was just clean and crazy and a motherfucker. Because I'm telling y'all, when I got in the wreck, I think I had 15 girlfriends that I was chasing around. And they all met each other at the hospital in front of my mama and daddy. You know, it was in front of my mama and daddy, all six of my kids and they mamas, because the mamas brought the kids, because I was, you know, I was in Herman Hospital in the trauma ward, you know, because I was paralyzed. My head was skinned back. And I come out with this little mark, you know, and my mama, when I woke up, my mama said, "Boy, what the hell were you doing?" Shit, I was living the life, you know. I was making $125,000 a year, and I had women everywhere because I worked in California. Every 3 months, I'd go to California and train and come back. So Santa Clara, San Francisco, Palo Alto, all up and down the coast, I had shit. Because they gave me an expense account, a rental car, and a corporate apartment. I could do what the hell I want. Oh, man. I need to tell y'all that, you know, I come from where, you know, it was, as long as a man was paying his way, he could have two or three women. But I'm an addict to where one is too many and 1,000 ain't never enough. You know? But I'm telling you that I was clean and crazy as hell. So when I woke up in the hospital, I had been unconscious for 11 days. And I woke up and my sponsor and his wife and three of them women were still there. And they wanted to know which one of them I wanted to stay. So I covered that trach in my neck. And I told all of y'all, get the hell out of here. Because I was fucked up and didn't even know why. You know, what was I doing in the hospital? I didn't even remember the wreck. You know, but I woke up paralyzed. And my fucking sponsor said, you know, he told me some of the most outrageous shit. You know, he told me, he said, "Man, I bet you're ready to work some steps now." And I want to know what the fuck a step got to do with me being paralyzed. But he told me, he said, "Man, you know, you can apply the principles to the steps in any area of your life." You know, he said, when we first get clean, we apply the steps to the drugs. But after you get 5, 10, 15, 20 years clean, you start applying the principles of the steps to everyday living, to everyday struggles that you go to. But I had to beat the drugs, okay? But now I had to deal with trying to be able to get adjusted to living life on this turn. And I need to tell y'all that there's some shit that come with this wheelchair. You know what I'm saying? I don't think they got no kids old enough to understand what I'm finna say, but my dick didn't work no more. And the one thing that drove me didn't work no more. So I really had to do some soul searching, y'all. You know, like, because you know that no matter what happened, getting high sometimes sound like a good idea. But my worst, the end of the road for me today is pawning my wheelchair for a hit and being stuck without my wheelchair. Because I gave my car away a bunch of times for a hit. I rented my car a whole bunch of times. I told you I had about 6 different cars at the end, you know, at the end of the day. All them some bitches was gone. I think I sold one for $20. Goddamn, 1981 Nissan Datsun 280ZX. I sold that motherfucker for a hit. But that's just how bad it got. But I'm going to tell you, I was laying in that bed when I woke up, and I told those women to leave. And my sponsor said that shit. And I was laying there thinking after they left that night, you know. And Morgan, the Shawshank Redemption was playing on the TV. And Tim Robbins told Morgan Freeman to get busy living or get busy dying. And I decided, laying in that bed, I grabbed that NA book and started reading the first 22 pages for 30 days. You know. And I decided to get busy living. And 16 years later, I need to tell y'all that life is real full. You know, when them 3 women that I put out that room, one of them came back. Because she said she didn't want to leave me by myself. You know, she came back. And we've been married for 15 years now. And we got a 12-year-old. So now I have 7 kids, because let me tell you, but it's all right, because she didn't have no kids, so she deserved at least one, you know what I'm saying? So, but don't tell me what medicine won't do, you know what I'm saying? And I got a 12-year-old that's mine, you know what I'm saying? And even that was miraculous how it happened, because we tried in vitro about 5 times almost, because I need to tell you, when I got in the wreck, that guy that I told y'all about, that lawyer, Robert Ammons, you know, he got me paid real good, you know. And he told me that, man, if you listen to me, you would never have to work again in your life. And since 2004, you know, I haven't went back to work. I haven't needed to work. I haven't been broke. But one thing I do is live within my means. And the principles behind the steps help me live within my means. You know, when I was in treatment, y'all, I was in treatment with about this many people. I was there for 2 months. So the first 30 days, you know, 30 days to end treatment, and then the next 30 days I was in the level 2 program. But I need to tell y'all, they might have had 150 people that come in and out, because, you know, every day, somebody graduating and somebody else coming in. Or somebody getting mad leaving and somebody else coming in. But this guy, one of the things he said, look around. And he said, I guarantee you next year, half of these people in here won't be clean. But I said to myself, fuck that, I'm going to be clean. And I'm telling y'all that I found me a sponsor. I started working steps. I stopped hanging out with people. Them people, them places, and them doing them things. And I've been clean for 20 years. And it ain't been no hap or circumstance. It's been through grit. Because I'm going to tell y'all, you wake up paralyzed from the chest down, a hit won't sound too bad. You wake up shitting on yourself and can't control it, a hit won't sound too bad. you know, it's some things that go on in my life, y'all, that I don't like. But I'm going to tell y'all, I wouldn't trade the life that I have today for nothing in the world. Because y'all know what I did this morning? I got up in my own house, took a bath by my own self, got dressed, got in my own car, went to church, came back, went, flew a kite. Because, you know, it was kite flying day on Zilker Park. I took my 12-year-old and my wife to Zilker Park and flew kites. Went to Chili's and ate, dropped them home, got in my car, and came out here to carry this life-saving message, y'all, because somebody did it for me. And if you don't like the way your life is going right now, if you're in treatment and don't know which way to go, find your sponsor. Find your meeting place. Go to meetings. Start working some steps. And I guarantee you, if you don't pick up, life will get better. If you work steps and apply principles, life will get good. But if you just don't pick up, it'll get better. Because you already know, you stop using and stop throwing your money away, life automatically get better. But if you start applying principles and grow spiritually, life will get better. Thank y'all for letting me share.